Welcome back, WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Reminder that the Maryland Crab Cake Tour is getting back out on the road. Shannon's Pub, Spirits West. We're going to be at Costas. We're going to be at Fadley's. It's going to be at Drug City. The whole schedule will be up at Crab Cake Tour at Baltimore Positive, and we'll be telling you more about it here at AM 1570. Of course, brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION, the way you order those windows. Had a couple of friends, Bill Cole and Mike Rosenfeld, have both gotten some windows from our friends at Window Nation. I'm going to get Harley and the guys on here soon to talk up the Crab Cake Tour, the 25th anniversary of WNST and AM 1570, as well as our oyster tour to celebrate that coming up in September. So I'm taking on oyster recipes. I'm taking on baseball concepts of how we replace Cedric Mullins, what's going on with pitching in the bullpen in the West Coast. I'm eating crabs at Costas this weekend. But Luke still has football on the brain. And Luke, before we even get to football, because I know we're going to do that, but I want to talk about the Baltimore jerseys and as it relates to the Ravens and as it relates to jerseys and as it relates to black jerseys and the blackout of the Ravens and the Free the Birds jerseys being stolen by these Nike jerseys. It's just say Baltimore on the front. And then they go out and they play like Greg Olsen did in 91, like where they need to import Chris Sale in here to cut them in half ceremoniously. I'm not a big City Connect guy, but of all the people, and I love my pajamas. I mean, I have Dan Pastorini jerseys around here. I love to talk about Astro Starburst and Tony Gwynn, but you really are the uniform police around here. You're the fashion tweet man out on Twitter. I've got to talk uniforms, and then I'll let you talk some football. All right.
Yeah. I'm very much the fashion police, judging by how I dress on a daily basis, but you know, it's one of those things where, first of all, I haven't been a big fan of the City Connect uniforms across baseball. And I think really you have to consider the source here. It's Nike. Look at how Nike has transformed college football uniforms, you know, going back to, you know, the earliest inceptions of Oregon's uniforms and how that has spread and how that's grown throughout college football. I do give the NFL credit. They haven't gone too crazy for the most part, despite Nike having handled their uniforms for the last decade. But long story short, I'm not a big City Connect uniforms guy. I think there have been a few across baseball where I'd say, all right, that's a decent concept. For the most part, I find it to be gaudy. I find it to be ugly. I'm very much a traditionalist when it comes to baseball uniforms. I don't mind an alternate jersey. You know, I love the Orioles orange, for example, but I'm very much a home whites and road grays kind of guy. And if, you know, teams that have brought back their classic powder blue, you know, I'm okay with that. I'm feeling that because there's at least a history there. But as it pertains to the Orioles City Connect, I do like the hat. I'll say the hat I like, you know, maybe an orange B as opposed to a white. But the uniform itself, and I'm sorry, the whole, while we wanted to focus on the inside of the uniform, which just reminds me of like, hey, I've got a stain on my shirt, but the inside of it's clean. It's not, and let's be clear, it's probably, they're not really trying to sell that to me. You know, they're not trying to sell that to you. They're, you know, younger people love the different uniforms. We've talked about this with Maryland football for years with all the different looks that they adopted. And oh, by the way, they've gone back to a classic look now, which they're going to start using as their permanent uniform. But I thought it's fine. It's not the worst City Connect uniform I've seen, but I'm with you in the sense of remembering my upbringing and Baltimore never being on the road jersey. And just to hear so much talk about, oh, this is our city in Baltimore. And look, it's good. I don't want to say that's a bad thing, but I do find some of it to be a little disingenuous, and especially with Nike designing it and everything. And
it lacks authenticity in every way possible, other than them bringing a Baltimore poet in to make up some ish that nobody that's been paying attention would ever believe. Or, I mean, they vilified me and our radio station for a decade over the premise that we would even consider that Baltimore should be anywhere near the name of the franchise. They didn't even answer the phones there. Rex Barney answered the phone when he was dead for years, and it said, "You've reached the Orioles," like literally. So, I you know, come on, man. You know, come on, man. You know, so I'll hear all of, but it is what it is, and it's either good looking or it's not. People like it or it's not, and then they either play well in them or they don't. And people take on their superstitions that they then push on to me as the, you know, like. I make fun of the stuff and people take it seriously. That's how rocked people are in the heads about whether black jerseys that said Baltimore with an orange swoosh would have any correlation to how Grayson Rodriguez pitched, or even Greg Olson all these years later probably could laugh about it, and hopefully he does. And I love Otter, but and that was a 66 Orioles jersey. Like, you know, like, so going back and seeing throwback jerseys is the greatest thing ever. I don't ever mind a throwback jersey, but the futuristic, we already have a futuristic team. They're called the Marlins. They play in their pajamas for 30 years, and they've just changed pajamas in the middle of the night. Well, and names of the franchise, all of that, and location for their circus that you witnessed a few years ago down there. Like, don't be a circus franchise. And if you're going to be a circus franchise, at least be like the Astros or the Padres and make it good.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is not something to lose sleep over. This is so far down on the list of things that, you know, that I've ever taken issue with. So I don't really care at the end of the day.
I don't either.
But I am glad that you brought up the turn back the clock in 1991. I was there. I was 7 years old.
I didn't know that.
I went with my dad, I believe my grandfather, my cousin Kyle, who listens sometimes if he's listening. What's up, Kyle?
Yeah, have your tickets up?
Maybe not. I'm not sure. However,
I want you to post that, and I want to give it to Otter.
I'll see if I can find it. But I think I remember that game so vividly because, you know, first of all, Mike Devereaux made a phenomenal catch high over the center field wall. I mean, everyone remembers the catch he made the following year on the Joe Carter ball in left center. I mean, which is one of the great catches in Camden Yards history. The catch he made in 91 wearing that classic 66 uniform was outstanding. But it's so funny that you brought that up because I was thinking the same thing on Friday night as Grayson Rodriguez is getting knocked around and it's ugly and gives up the grand slam and everything. And I'm just thinking, boy, is he going to do what Greg Olson did, which was throw his entire uniform, including his spikes, in the trash after the game. So, hey, it's an alternate uniform. You know, they're not going to wear it every single game. It's fine. But the hoopla around it and all the, well, designing the inside of the jersey, like that was the part that was a little too artsy for me, I guess. It's a baseball uniform at the end of the day. What does the outside of it look like? I mean, that's really what it comes down to. But
and you
no
are a
deal.
Franchise that for 30 years refused to acknowledge the city you played in, even after we built the franchise. So, like, come on, man. Yeah, you know, I can continue to go back to that when you're peddling me this garbage, you know, in on the backside of what I've lived and what I know to be true, not. And I can tell the kids about it factually because I don't lie to the kids about how it really has gone down around here and the desperation. It feels really desperate to me that you have to hug and love the hometown that you played in for 60 years because you haven't done it enough.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I don't think it's desperation as much as they're selling jerseys, right? It's a Nike City Connect marketing thing that is – everyone in baseball is doing it. Every team's going to have them. Most of the teams have them at this point. They were kind of lower on the list as far as getting one. It's fine. The thing that I mean, I love the Baltimore road jersey. Like I love the Baltimore script. So just to see plain block letters, Baltimore.
It's a downgrade.
That's right. Exactly.
It's song of a really good, of a great song that just doesn't need to be covered.
Yeah. Exactly, because their uniforms, other than the O's cap that I just am not a fan of, I love their uniforms. I think they have great looks. I mean, the home whites, the road grays. I love the orange jersey with the white panel cap on Saturdays. I think that's a fantastic look as alternate uniforms go across baseball. I like the black jersey. Like I said, I just don't like the O's cap. So it's whatever. Again, we've already spent too much time on it.
All right, let's go.
But I'm in agreement with you on your sentiment about Baltimore on the road jersey for so long. So hearing that now, it's just like, well, I would have liked hearing that in the 80s and 90s, quite
Let me give him
frankly.
a little kick on the groin. Mr. I'm going to have a press conference on Martin Luther King Day to protect myself, Angelos, and then lie to everyone about opening the books, all of which is that's not Peter. That's not the Peter principles. That's the here and the now. That's the guy running the place. And to pander to the African-American community in a city where that's been going on for a century, when, I mean, I look at the crowds. The crowds are the crowds are Caucasian. That's who this appeals to. And to play that, I don't have any time for it. I mean, if you would like for African-American citizens to support the team, play the game, introduce them to the sport at something other than I clicked on Friday to go down there to see Rodriguez pitch, and it was going to cost me and my wife $65 to walk in for the two of us. And I just said, I mean, $10 tickets, whatever, $5 bargain night. You got a lot of empty seats. You've roped off the whole upper deck for nothing in particular in the roof. You want to reach to people to have them come to the game. Don't do it with a $160 jersey that has piping underneath of it, that has some hidden meaning that has nothing to do with the way you've conducted yourself. Football. Luke Jones is here. He's at Baltimore. Luke, you can send all the fan mail to me, nasty@wnst.net, ness@baltimorepositive.com. I'm good with all of that because I've lived through all of that. Chapter 4 of Peter Principles comes out this week. And by the way, team's playing great baseball. Football for you. OTAs, Lamar in. I mean, it's a Lamar watch now, right? Like, you guys all gather out there. They don't allow me to ask questions of Lamar. Lamar's on Lamar time now, right? Like, that's where we are. Like, if we weren't there when he wasn't taking, vaccines a couple of years ago, or when the knees up, it is a Lamar franchise now. All of everything's going to go through him. Munkin, Harbaugh, like, he is in command in a big, big different kind of way now. I felt that at the press conference. Like, the air's out of the tire from a pressure standpoint. But now they got to go, like, play and win, do things that they still have never done, quite frankly. And it's a real work time out there, right? Like, they're having a good time and everybody's happy, but it's a time to, like, really install relationship, right?
Yeah, it is. And really, the focus is no longer on the business side, obviously, because he signed and he's under contract for 5 years, His status is not even in question for at least a few of those years in terms of, the finances and all of that. So he's there. So the focus returns to the field. And this is a Ravens team that has a great deal of potential. You look at the upside on the offensive side of the football and throwing the ball and upgrades at wide receiver. And it's all sitting there, but you put in the work. So it's great to see Lamar at OTAs last week, and he confirmed his intentions are to be there for the rest of OTAs, which is what you expect out of your franchise quarterback, who's no longer in question in terms of his long-term status or any business concerns or anything like that, as he was dealing with last year, as we talked about at ad nauseum. So it's time to focus on football. There's nothing that terribly pressing going on in late May and early June, but you are laying the foundation. So it was good to see him out there. He walked back his 6,000 yard comment a touch, which that was a tongue in cheek thing anyway, that I think way too many people got too fired up about one way or the other. But he acknowledged, hey, yeah, I mean, the expectation is he's going to be throwing the football more than he has in the past. The expectation is he's going to run the ball less than he has in the past. That doesn't mean that they're the most pass happy team in the league. I don't think they're going to be anywhere close to that, but I think you're going to see a much more balanced offense, and they invested at the wide receiver position to do that. So we're going to see how it plays out. I don't think we're going to get any earth shattering type observations this time of year, as I wrote in my latest 12 Ravens thoughts at BaltimorePositive.com. OTAs, it's not terribly competitive. The young guys, they're competing, right? I mean, they're trying to, guys that are on the bubble and guys that are undrafted, they're doing everything they can. But the older guys, they're out there putting in their work, but they're also taking care of each other. You hear coaches say multiple times during these practices, take care of each other. So that's where I caution. Observations are fun. I do them just like anyone else that's out there, but I remind everyone that There's not a whole lot going on right now that is extraordinarily consequential, other than, and we talked about this a little bit when you and I were talking about Cedric Mullins, on the heels of his injury, other than an injury this time of year. So that's where you want guys to, put in the work, but also take care of each other. So, it's fun to see this offense look different. I certainly expect more three wide receiver sets than we saw under Greg Roman. I expect more spread. I expect them to try to use the width of the football field and try to lighten up the opposing defense's box in trying to run the ball and things of that nature. So I think that's going to look different. But at the same time, as I've said from the moment that we started talking about Todd Monken as an offensive coordinator candidate for the Ravens way back in January and February, go look at his Georgia offenses. They ran the ball. And they feature tight ends prominently. So those Greg Roman principles, while I think they won't be emphasized quite as dramatically, they're not going away either. So that's where you let this thing evolve. They're figuring out now, what are you going to do well? What are you going to do not quite as well? What do we need to work on? What do we need to augment? What do we maybe need to eliminate between now and the start of the season? That's what you do with an offense, especially when you're installing something that's new. And Todd Monken right now is learn not just the players learning his system, he's learning everything he can about Lamar Jackson and his O-line and his running backs and his wide receivers and his tight ends. And he's trying to have all that kind of mesh with what his basic offensive system is, which to his credit has been very flexible. And he's been, his system has been quite malleable going from place to place to really say, hey, this is what we have in terms of personnel. This is what we do best. And going somewhere else, well, this is a little bit different than where I was before. This is how we're going to adjust. So I think that's why he was appealing to John Harbaugh and the organization. And we're going to see how it plays out. And one thing that really strikes me in the earliest impressions, because formations, things of that nature, it's still very much up in the air what it's actually going to look like come the fall. But more vocal than Greg Roman, more hands-on than Greg Roman, and you get the sense, and I don't say this as a knock to Greg Roman, just an observation on Todd Monken. You get the sense that he's kind of a no-nonsense guy, that, whether it's quarterback, running back, offensive lineman, wide receiver, tight end, if something's not being done the way he wants it to be done, he's going to tell that individual. And not that he's going to be some over-the-top taskmaster, but he's going to be someone who won't sugarcoat things, which I think will be interesting just given the dynamic of where this offense was the last couple of years and kind of really plateauing the way that it had and starting to backslide the way that it did the last couple of years. So interested to see how that continues to evolve and play out. But in the meantime, it's football and shells and shorts. And that's fine this time of year, but that's where, again, the observations are fun, but don't take anything to the bank. Don't, good or bad, there's only so much to glean from this time of year. And as long as we understand that, it's great to be out there for OTAs and talking a little bit of football. As I saw on Monday, we reached the point where we're 100 days away from the start of the regular season. So I'm not wishing the summer away, especially with the Orioles doing what they're doing right now. But just a reminder that it'll be here before we know it, that's for sure.
Well, certainly the heartbeat of baseball, which I've noted the last 2 weeks here on the show and all over BaltimorePositive.com, the football part of this happens when DeAndre Hopkins winds up out on the street and everybody's counting the Ravens cap money. And you and I are probably saying, well, what about that Justin Houston piece or that Calais Campbell piece or that Marcus Peters piece or that veteran piece that this team has had that it has none of the above at this point, and they have an Adafi Owe and draft picks and where they're going to be on the back end of their defense. And you'd say, well, they got OBJ, they Flowers. I mean, how rich do you need to make a wide receiver room in a room where you and I have debated at length over the last 5 years how much they should or shouldn't be passing the football? But it doesn't get by the internet, does it?
It doesn't. And look, I will not rule anything out because I would have told, if you had told me 2 months ago that the Ravens would be signing Odell Beckham to a $15 million contract, I'd say you're crazy. So
That's not what they do, right?
fully acknowledging that and what you would typically expect from them in the past, I don't, I wouldn't expect it. I think you look at where they are right now. I mean, I don't think they have the best wide receiver group in the NFL or a top five or even probably a top 10, but it is much, much better and in much better shape and much more potential than it's had in a long time. And what more can you ask when you consider where they had been the last couple of years in that regard? But you just said it, you know, whether it's bringing back a Justin Houston, whether it's adding Marcus Peters back to the mix, which I don't know if what it'll happen, but I still think they need to add another defensive back, you know, a veteran to the mix to fortify their depth a little bit. So they have needs there. Look, if DeAndre Hopkins really badly wants to be a Raven and is willing to sacrifice a little bit financially in order to make that happen, am I going to be dismissive of adding another great pass catcher to the mix? No, not completely. Do I think when you look at if you would add him in addition to Beckham and Zay Flowers, and oh yeah, you
Still
still have
one
Rashad
ball.
Bateman,
Still one
and
ball.
I haven't even mentioned, oh, you have an all-pro tight end and Mark Andrews, and oh, what about J.K. Dobbins, who wasn't happy with not getting the ball enough last year? That's where I do look at this thing and say, probably not the, you know, the Ravens probably aren't the most logical place for him to land, but who knows? And I'll go back to something that you mentioned a few minutes ago with Lamar Jackson and, you know, everything kind of gravitating to him at this point. And hey, when you're making $52 million a year, I mean, that's kind of how it works, right? And, you know, we heard the rumblings and what Michael Lombardi, you know, reporting, you know, long before, I guess before Beckham even signed, or right around that time, that Lamar had requested both Odell Beckham and DeAndre Hopkins. And, you know, Lamar said he asked about that. You know, whether he demanded it or not, I guess is semantics and interpretation and all that. So, you know, you never say never, especially in an off season where I've been quite surprised to see how things play out the way they have. But at the same time, I think you do look at, you know, fortifying a couple areas on the defensive side of the ball. Or hey, let's also throw out, you know, the possibility if Ben Cleveland or any of the incumbents, the internal candidates for that left guard spot. You know, is there a move to be made that you could add a starting left guard between now and the start of the season? So, you know, it's not just about wide receiver. At the same time, you know, if DeAndre Hopkins is interested in being a Raven, at the very least, you're going to have a conversation at the very least. I think that much is clear. But does go back to what you just said, and Todd Monken even acknowledged this recently, that at the end of the day, there is only one football. And I think going from one extreme to the other would be, let's just say, quite interesting to see how that would play out, if
You
nothing
expect them to
else.
spend this money on the defense, though, right? Correct?
I would think so. I think, you know, and obviously there are always ways to create cap space, but I think to me, you look at edge, you know, whether it's Justin Houston or someone similar to him that's still out there, I think you look there, and I think you look at defensive back. Now, I would say more corner, but I think the way that Mike McDonald really likes his defense with the nickel, I think they like using three safeties, and I think that gives them an opportunity to move Hamilton down to play the slot again, or you could put Brandon Stevens there, however you want to do it. So, you know, whether it's a corner or whether it's another safety that you would kind of say, okay, this will be our third safety, you know, and kind of use our sub package it that way. I'm inclined to think that there's still another move, if not two, to be made on the defensive side of the ball.
And they're
So,
never
not
comfortable in the
lucrative.
secondary. They
You
never
never
have
should
enough.
be. You can never have enough. There are few ways, other than your franchise quarterback going down, and that's the no duh, Captain Obvious statement. There are few ways to sink a contender's championship hopes than a couple ill-timed injuries in the
Well,
secondary of
Billick
a
got
guy.
fired over it, kind of, sort
I
of. You know,
mean,
the whole, like, at the end, just, you know, when your back end leaks, it's over. And, I mean, with Humphrey's injury 2 years ago, and Pete, I mean, like, we saw it sort of sink then.
2014. 2014. I mean, they had two touchdown leads in New England, and their defense, they couldn't stop Tom Brady in that Patriots passing game. They just couldn't. So, you know, you need the horses in the secondary. And I think the Ravens, I think they're in good shape, but could it be better between now and the start of the season? I think there's another move or two to potentially be made there, come August and September.
All right. Well, Luke will be monitoring it all while eating hot dogs and staying up late with the Orioles this weekend as the birds travel to San Francisco. That should be a treat. I'm looking for some crabs at Costas over the weekend. I have not had my first crab, but I've had a lot of crab cakes. Maryland Crab Cake Tour is back out on the road. We're coming to Spirits West. We are coming to Shannon's over in Halethorpe. I know where Ray Bachman said, when you get out to the southwest side of town. So it's all courtesy of our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We're giving away these instant lottery scratch-offs. These have felt like a really lucky batch, if there is such a thing. We were up at the local in Falston last week. Had a great chat with Fancy Clancy Haskett. I actually picked up a Fancy Clancy at Drug City at the liquor store. Didn't bring the Orioles good luck over the weekend, but it will in the future. I feel like whenever I drink that Fancy Clancy, it's gonna something special is going to happen. Jay Ellenby telling stories of me running in my underwear through the streets. All of it brought to you by our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. Taking us out on the road, we're going to be at Pappas. We're going to be at Costas. We're going to be at Drug City. And we're also going to be down at Costas to start the beginning of the 25th anniversary. That's on August 3rd, August 4th in Dundalk. We have a whole summer ahead. Luke's got a whole summer ahead of baseball and a little bit of football as well. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore positive.